I'm trying to address men and fathers here that I work a lot with, is no, you have value, man. Like, absolutely. Nothing you need to prove yourself. I'm all for changing and growing yourself and being healthy, but start with acceptance of who you are today. But if you start actually with acceptance, it actually opens the door for freedom and to move freely rather than this rigid, like, I have to get here to have worth. I have to have this job. I have to have this promotion. I have to make this amount of money. I have to get this. Because then we're stuck in this game of trying to meet some standard that we'll never really ever meet. Because once we meet that standard, what happens is that goalpost gets moved another 100 yards. I gave you a big hug. Say I'm
feeling great, it's okay, baby. All right, guys, welcome back to the Jersey to Vegas podcast. This is episode number 100. All right, I'm on 97, but we're filming 100 now because it's a very special man, a very special person, if you want me to say, that I listen to on YouTube, that I listen to on Instagram. And if you want to, it's Therapy for Dads. You can follow him right there. His name is Travis. All right, I met him through the internet. I never actually met him in person. But there's a lot of times that I'll get lost, or I need some advice, or I need something to listen to, or something to kind of expand a troublesome thought that I might have. And he's always there with the right video for me to watch. So I appreciate, I respect, I look up to this man right here because he's actually a professional. He's just like not my friend. You know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of friends that give me advice, but he's actually a pro. So I think having a pro... finally, for episode number 100 is very important. So, guys, with a nice round of applause, we are not going to clap, but let's welcome Travis to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete. That's a very kind of you. And yeah, I guess I'm a pro. I don't think of myself that way. I don't, but it's very kind words. And, you know, I can hear the sincerity, and I really do appreciate that. You know, it definitely warms my soul, my heart to hear those things that, you know, that you find it helpful. That's part of why I do what I do, is to be helpful, to actually help people. And on the Instagram account, specifically to help men in general and fathers, to kind of really help them along their path and kind of holistic mental health and helping them be better versions of themselves and to grow. I mean, that's really what it's all about. So I know we met and we've had some amazing conversations, and I've had you on my podcast as well. And being able to hear your story and who you are is really, we've shared about this, has impacted my life. And, you know, just knowing that your story has shaped me, has impacted me. And I think that's the beautiful thing about relationships, is that when we meet people, when we have conversation, that they forever change, not to be cheesy, but that they really do, they forever change us and they forever impact us. And so I thank you for the friendship we've cultivated over the past, I mean, how long it's been now, but I think at least over a year, right?
Yeah, it was
something.
We got to be a year. Pandemic-ish. Yeah.
Yeah. So. In the pandemic we met, and then we're now, I guess we're out of it, I think. Okay. And officially in California, the threat's over. That happened a couple weeks back, officially in California. I think it was the 31st of March, I think, is when they said it's done. So April 1st, things are different. So, those words really, I think it's always good to hear, I guess, how people think of you, and because you never really know.
Right.
And to hear that it is having a positive impact, it gives me energy to keep going, to keep creating, to keep fighting, to keep sharing, to keep, you know, having conversations with people. So thanks, Pete.
Yeah, man, you have to keep going. Like, in this, I guess you could say, in this realm or world of, I don't want to say influencer, but someone that makes content, like a content creator, I guess, right? Like, it gets lonely. You don't know if you're actually doing anything. It's not like you want a round of applause for it, right? I don't want people to send me flowers and, like, you know, send me a gift. But, like, are people actually listening? You know, are people actually taking in, maybe not even using, right? If hopefully you're using some of the thoughts or ideas or experiences that we've gone through for yourself, but like sometimes you don't. And a perfect example is, like, I just made a podcast yesterday or last night, and I talked about quitting and quitting in general, not just quitting this, but it's like, even with podcasting and YouTube channels and all the other stuff, you want to quit sometimes because it's like, why am I even doing this?
Yeah. You know?
And sometimes it takes that one person to just say, like, man, it really helps. And it's like, well, why didn't you tell me? You know, like kind of. It's like, but I guess not their job to tell you. And then when they do, they will.
Yeah. I can relate. I've had those thoughts at times. Like, wait, you know, is this having an impact? Is this worth the time I'm putting in? Is it, you know? And then you hear these people, you know, say something, and you're like, okay, that's why I'm doing this, because it is helping somebody, and it's giving another guy, another dad, another man, a help when they needed it, and happened to be the right timing, and it helped them. And like, okay, that's why I'm doing it. And it gives me the energy and motivation to keep creating, knowing that the reality is not everyone is going to say something. And even in my profession, you know, as a therapist, I do get feedback from people, but it's not often. But you do get feedback. I mean, you get that feedback specifically. I think it's also a cultural thing. We don't share enough, I think, appreciation, I think in general. And I think that just that trickles into really all areas of life that we might think it. A lot of people might think things.
Right.
But to then go and say it, or to write it, or to express it. Now, some people are really good at this. Some people, that's just how they're wired that way to really do that. But I'd say more often than not, it's in our head, and we never actually express it to someone, but we feel it. When you do hear it, though, it's amazing what it does. You feel energized. You feel excited. Like, I want to keep doing this. And it does something too. In fact, I think in the, you know, John Gottman, the work he did in couples therapy, I'm sure you're familiar with him. And
right.
One of his principles for making a relationship last through the ages is this thing called nurturing fondness and admiration. And that's all about essentially verbalizing your appreciation for your partner and loved one or your kids. I mean, this could trickle down to your kids too, is sharing those positives, right. All that, like putting that in the bank over and over and over again, because that does something. That verbal appreciation goes a long way. It fills that person up. When we do hear it, I totally relate it. It helps you kind of recalibrate, saying, okay, that's why I'm not quitting. That's why I want to keep going, because I'm seeing the impact, and I'm hearing it, getting the feedback, knowing that it's even helping one person, you know,
right?
Like, it's helping somebody. And maybe that one that helps someone so profoundly that if they didn't see what I did, who knows what their life would have been like. So it's kind of like, you just never know. I think that in the end, you never know the impact you're going to have, whether you're on camera, or whether you're walking in a store, like grocery shopping, or if you're with your kids or your friends, like you just never know. Like, you're always, not to be like overly observant, but you just never know who's watching, you know, you never know who's observing you and taking in what you're doing and how that might affect them. So anyway,
very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true. You never know.
Yeah.
And I guess you just keep doing it. You know, just if, yep. I guess if it means something to you, it means something to someone else, you know, and I guess mm-hmm. that's the belief that you kind of have to go yeah. with the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing it. You're new to our channel, new to the podcast. Do you want to explain a little more? I know you kind of dabbled. Everyone kind of understands what it is you're doing. Here's a question that I had was, you've interviewed many, many people before, many dads, mm-hmm. right? What do you think is the biggest, I guess you could say, not synchronized with the commonality. I don't know the word. What do you think is the most common,
like, themes?
Yeah. Like, they talk about the most, you know, you freely talk. Is there something there that kind of triggers out, the same thing over and over and over again?
Yeah, definitely some themes that stand out. I work with men and fathers. And as a quick side note, I'm very excited to be part of the 100th episode. I think it's a big deal. So I feel very...
I didn't mean to put pressure.
You know, I feel very honored to be on the 100th episode. I feel like that's a big milestone, my friend. So congratulations. Yeah, it's a big deal. So congratulations to you. Some themes that I hear, you know, being a therapist, you know, often I get people coming to my office for very specific reasons. As a mental, marriage and family therapist, trauma-informed therapist, you know, I get a obviously a niche of people coming into my office that are looking for help. And so some common themes I hear, especially working with men and fathers, is often how alone and isolated they feel for various reasons. a lot of it has to do with masculinity or unhealthy, unbalanced masculinity, or this, you know, this fun term, toxic masculinity. While I don't necessarily, I don't agree, I understand where that's coming from, the term. I think it's a misdirection on what we really need to be addressing, because then it could just focus on this. But I get why they say it. But often there's these unhealthy, unbalanced, how men have been raised, how boys have been raised, and how society has impacted them. In some ways, in positive ways, but in a lot of ways, when I get coming in, I think a lot of isolation and loneliness comes from this idea that, well, men can't have, you know, shouldn't have certain feelings. They have to be a certain way. They have to be quote unquote strong, and strong is very near, you know, strength in this view is very narrowed and, you know, very specific what that looks like. You know, all the classic, like, boys don't cry. Mm-hmm. You should just figure it out, pull up your, you know, put, figure yourself up by your bootstraps and keep going. And so a lot of these men are trying to keep going, living life this way, but they kind of struggle and suffer in silence because, well, I can't tell anyone how I'm feeling because that would be, I wouldn't be a man anymore. I can't get help because then I'm not a man anymore. So they kind of get stuck in this kind of catch 22 of they need help and they need support, but then struggle because I can't go out. So they kind of get stuck in this place until eventually something big enough happens that they come in to see me. And not always, not every guy, but it's a very common theme. And I can say that there's not a week that goes by that I don't, if I get a guy in my office, a new guy in my office every week, that at least one of them is not talking to some degree how the idea of being masculine and a man, how that is in opposition to having, being vulnerable and having certain feelings, and how they often don't know how to find comfort in relationships. They look at it and seek it elsewhere. So these are some of the main themes I see time and time and time and time and time and time again, that it's very common. So I'm often working with them on kind of exploring that and, you know, expanding and healing from some of this kind of these narrowed views, and kind of, and some of them experience some significant trauma around it too. Wow. You know,
yeah,
from parents, from friends, from schoolmates, from teachers, from coaches, right, from, you know, you name it. There's a whole bunch of things that we can experience this from. So yeah, some of the common themes I see very regularly.
Oh man, that's kind of something that I wouldn't have thought of as one of the common grounds or themes that they have going on. So like if they come in and what would be, say, I know everyone's case is probably different, correct? What would you, mm-hmm. what would be like the first thing to tell them or ask them to do, or would you should suggest them to do?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely generalize with the themes I tend to see, and you're right. Everyone's, there's definitely unique. Everyone's got a unique story that I'm often being curious about, listening to and getting to know their story. And I always think of in terms of a story. We tell our life in story and narrative form. We, you know, tell me about your life. And so we tell it in a story. So I'm listening to their story, having them tell me the story as far back as they can remember, which gives me some insight and idea around who they were as a little kid, a little boy, and how they were shaped and family relationships, all these things that impact them, and then the teens. And because all of these things matter, all these experiences impact them for the better, as well as impact them for maybe not so better. Maybe it has a negative impact and has been hurt there. So when I first meet with a guy, the very first thing is I want to get to know their story, be curious about who they are, why they think, why they do what they do now, and where that started. And so as I work with them, often what I find a lot of men, you know, with the other theme is they're often disconnected from certain emotions. They're often disconnected from their body. They don't really know how to, they don't necessarily always have what we call emotional intelligence or high emotional intelligence. It tends to be more immature, almost like a five, you know, like a little kid, almost like it's a little kid emotional intelligence. Yeah. It tends to be stuck in more frustration and anger, you know, with kind of a little to no low vocabulary about their emotional states. Or, you know, often, again, they're dealing with stuff on their own, or they're avoiding things, or not, they're keeping themselves busy to not think about certain things or feelings. Yeah. You know, they're overworking, you know, I just got to stay, you know, work myself to the grave, then I pass out, rinse and repeat, or they're at the gym overworking to keep their mind occupied, or, you know, they're just doing busy tasks. And other men turn to other things too to deal with the stuff in their head that they don't want to think or feel. You know, from you know, pornography, to alcohol, drugs, to just, you know, TV, Netflix, just really anything. So when I'm assessing a guy, kind of I'm listening for what is their level of emotional intelligence? What is their level of comfortability with vulnerability and talking? What are some of their fears and barriers, and where did those come from, and how those been adaptive for them? Because often their coping strategies were adaptive and they served a purpose to survive. And so I'm helping them first see and acknowledge their behaviors and why they do it, like helping almost like as they're telling the story, I'm making, it's like I'm putting a puzzle together,
right,
like of their life and, you know, why they do this and, you know, why they might turn to pornography or why they might turn to TV or why they might turn to working a ton of hours or why they might, you know, work out at the gym 4 hours a day, you know, whatever it might be, fill in the blank is like, hey, what is this doing and why is it doing and what is it giving you and what problem is it solving? And once I begin to understand that, and that's kind of the first step, is I just kind of listen and kind of ask them to tell me why they do this and what's happening. And then I start to assess, what do I need to have them do? And often a big thing I do, I'm a big proponent of writing and journaling, go figure. I'm like, let's start writing. Let's just start simple. Let's just start paying attention to your day. Let's, you know, because as a dad myself, I, you know, this is also for me, because I find that as a dad of three, I also, my memory, even as a therapist, you know, if I think of 2 weeks ago, I'm like, okay, well, what did I do 2 weeks ago? And let alone what did I do last night? You know, sometimes some days, weeks, months can blur. And so I find the benefit of writing and logging, because it really helps you see the nuanced changes, because we can get so, you know, our perspective can be so skewed sometimes. And we can be really poor historians, and we can be really skewed on our perspective, especially if our perspective is filled with an emotional perspective. And so that can really, we can actually ignore certain things because we're so focused on a certain feeling state. And then if we're in that feeling state, everything gets filtered through that lens. And so it's like sunglasses. So we only pick up what we want to pick up. And so when I have them write, I often start with this technique I call the high and the low.
Okay.
Which is just real simple. Hey, write the high and the low of every day. Start there. You know, it's a quick little log exercise. And the high and the low is really exactly how it sounds like. Pick a high point, something positive from the day. It could be anything. I don't care what it is. It could be that the sun is shining. Maybe that's the highlight for the day. It could be you got a raise. It could be you had fun with your kid. It could be you had your favorite food. It doesn't matter, but pick the high point, the positive. What happened and how'd you feel about it? So I'm also trying to help train them to build their kind of emotional strength, their vocabulary up, especially if I know that it's kind of weak or untrained.
Right.
I kind of help build that just to kind of start slow and see kind of where they, after a week, kind of see how they are with their emotional vocabulary and strength. Is it strong? Do I need to do a lot of work there? Like, where is it? And then their awareness to connect events and circumstances with emotional states as well as thoughts, kind of like, how are they able to, see the connection, or is it kind of everywhere? What do I need to do there? So that's the high point. And I say, hey, you might have 10 highs. Well, pick the one that stands out most to you. Like, you might have pick the one that is most present or apparent, you know, to you. Write about that one. And I say with the same thing with the low point. A low point can be anything that was something frustrating, annoying, that pissed you off, that got you angry, something sad, something, it doesn't matter. But of the low points of the day, pick one that really stands out to you. Because you might have, you know, 5 or 20. Well, what's the one that really kind of like comes to the surface? Write about that one. And so I just say, pick one of each. Because what I'm doing there is I'm assessing for their emotional vocabulary. Again, their awareness of events and how events impact us and how our behavior, how our emotions, how our thoughts and feelings are all interconnected. And kind of I'm listening to for their language, because I give them a week or two to do this. And when I come back, it's like I should see a report and we talk about it. I'm like, okay. And then I'm also looking for themes. You know, are there any themes of the week that kind of come back and forth? And another thing on the high and the low is I have them write down, you know, write down your top 3 to 5 worries of the day, or things that bug you or annoy you or frustrate you, you know. And then I also look for themes there. You know, are there reoccurring themes that are showing up over the weeks or the month? And then I use that as a way to say, let's explore these things and kind of build in. And so really these things are trying to build, I'm building foundational kind of a foundation here with them, as well as assessing. And when I know if they come back, for example, if they struggle with identifying their emotional states, I'll spend some more time there. And I know you've done gym work and do training. And so it's very much like training the body. It's like we're training the emotional, I call it the emotional and mental muscles.
Right.
We can't see it with our eyes, but it's there. But it's the best way I just, especially working with men, is like, oh, they get the concept. So it's like, we're working this muscle out, but it's like the first time at the gym, you're not going to go over there and lift six plates. You know, you're not going to do that. Like you could, but you're probably going to injure yourself seriously and have another problem. But we start off with, you know, let me ask you this as a trainer, what are the things, what do you start off first when people come into the gym? What are you doing first with them?
Doing what you're doing, assess them, see where they've been,
assess them.
See what they've been doing, assess.
Right.
Let's start from where you are. Right.
We'll start from where you are. And what do you, you know, what's something you're looking for in them when they're lifting a weight, for example, what are you looking at first?
Dysfunctions, bad form. Do they know what they're doing?
Right. Anything. You can care less about the weight, right? You're like, it's more about what's the form? What's the function? What are they, how are they doing it?
Right.
And it's the same thing with mental and emotional well-being and mental emotional health is I'm assessing what's their form? What's the function? What are they able to do? So I'm watching and listening and paying attention to these things. And then I'm starting to build on, okay, you know what? We got to really work on form. Let's reset, because what you're doing is you're gonna injure yourself, as you know. It's like, okay, sure, I just see this, you know, you're gonna be wrecked if you keep doing this, right? Or maybe you already have some injuries that we need to work with because you've been doing it wrong, not thinking about it. So I'm doing that too. I'm assessing for the next step. Once I have that basic of like the high and the low and their worries, I then look at, okay, when you are stressed out, when you are worried, when you're dealing with stress at work or at home or with your kids or whatever, what do you do? How are you, you know, the classic word, how are you coping with that? How do you address that problem? How do you deal with it? And often what I hear is, well, I don't, or I go to work, or I go to the gym, or I do this, or I go to bed, or I just stay busy, or I just avoid it. I just distract myself. So I hear, I escape. So I hear a lot of escapism, a lot of distraction, a lot of avoidance. And I don't poo-poo that, you know, because it serves a purpose. I often acknowledge the reason why we do that, that it makes sense, that it's part of our survival brain. We're trying to deal with pain and trauma and hurt. And so it makes sense why you distract. And sometimes too, by the way, all those things are purposeful and useful within the right context, like distractions, avoidance, like those aren't necessarily bad. In fact, they're very adaptive and helpful within the right context and within the right time frame. Now, if we're doing that always, then we're never actually addressing the problems, and those problems just get bigger. So we have to look at, okay, how these things are adaptive, distractions, avoidance, how those things are useful, as well as how those things could be actually more damaging. So it's both and once we understand that, I then start to implement skills, which is why I like them to write, is because then they're actually acknowledging the problem or beginning to learn how to. So it's kind of like this tandem work of building the form, the foundational skill, the emotional intelligence, of the strength, looking at how they're coping. I often ask, and this is not my genius, I'm taking from people who are experts. I often ask the comfort question, how do you find comfort when you're in distress? What do you do? Do you turn to a friend?
How do you find comfort when you're in distress?
So how do you, when you're in distress, whether it's, you know, emotional, mental distress,
right?
Who or what do you turn to for comfort?
Wow.
So that's like, you know, so I'm trained in attachment science and kind of this attachment model of that we're wired, biologically hardwired, to seek out safe connection when we're in distress. And if you're a parent, some of us probably listening to the show, you may or may not be a parent, but those of us that are parents that have children, you see this in small children pretty much right away. When a small child is hurting, or when they're upset, when they're hungry, when they got a boo-boo, when maybe their diaper's wet, when they're in some type of distress, what do?
They cry and try to find you.
They cry and try to find. Now, did you teach them to do that?
No.
No. You didn't say, okay, Timmy, when you're hurt or hungry or sad or you got a boo-boo, or your diaper's wet or you're tired, start crying and then come seek me out. You don't do that. It's wired into kids to seek out us, which we're the safety, we're the comfort, we're the rock, we're the parent. So they look for us for safety, They look for us to be comforted, because what a good parent would do is we do what? What's a good parent do? If your kid's crying, they're coming to you, what do?
Nurture.
You nurture.
Nurture.
And what? And you pick them up, right?
Yeah. Hold them, you pick, support them, whatever it is.
Right. You hold them, support them, pat their back. I'm here. Are you okay? And you assess. But you first kind of say, I'm here, right?
Right.
I'm here. Like, it's okay, buddy, or, you know, whatever you call your kid, you know, whatever. I'm here.
Right.
Because we're wired for that. Biologically wired to seek out a safe person for comfort, because that's actually how we soothe best. Now, quick side note, not all of us grew up in a home that our parents were safe to connect with.
Right.
And I'm not talking that parents don't need to be 100% perfect. That's actually not what kids need. It's more about generally speaking.
Right.
Not every moment, because you know what? Am I perfect? Heck no. Do I miss my kids? Absolutely. Because kids don't need perfect. In fact, there's some research, I think it's something like 30 to 40%, something really low actually, that we need to attune to our kids for our kids to feel safe and connected. Something like 30, 40%.
Oh, wow.
Which is actually not that much if you think about it. But because our kids are able to have the awareness of, you know, we're not perfect. So when we attune to our kids, they feel safe. And as adults, we actually need the same thing. Now, the difference is, what did we learn from our parents or caregiver growing up? Were they safe? Could we rely on them? Or were our parents not reliable? Were they not dependable? Or were they the source of pain? And so we adapt as children to adapt to that, to survive. So we might turn to numbing out. We might avoid. We might turn to overwatching TV, or burying ourselves in books or magazines or school, or we might turn to sports, or some of us might start experimenting with drugs and alcohol when we're young, or we might turn to other things to deal with pornography. We turn to other things to deal with in distress, especially if our model is one that isn't really safe or consistent. And so coming into adulthood, I work with men saying, okay, who do you turn to now? And if they tell me that their primary source is, let's say, pornography, or their primary source is drinking, or the primary source is just numbing out and tuning to TV, or their primary source is doing something else, what that tells me is there's something in their story, in their past, that people were not dependable. Ooh. Or people were not safe. And so they learn to say, I can't really trust people. People hurt me, or they're not there for me. Because there's also the idea of people maybe, it's like the lack of something too can also be a pain point. Well, no one was just there. It was not even like explicit. My parents didn't yell at me. They might have just didn't respond to me. They might have been working all the time, and there was just no one around, where it wasn't like they were beating me. Some of that's true, something that happens, but sometimes it's just the parents working because that's what they had to do to survive for their family. It's almost like it just happens, but then dad's gone all the time or mom's gone. And so it's like the latchkey kid thing where it's like, it's not like any apparent abuse, but it's just the lack of something. And so the kid says, well, I gotta survive. And so I become hyper independent and realize I can't really depend on mom and dad. So I gotta just depend on myself.
Right.
Or I gotta, you know, and then if I'm the oldest, I gotta take care of my siblings. So I become a parent, a young kid. So and that tends to work into that male becoming someone who works a lot to provide. So it comes from a place of survival. So it's this delicate dance of understanding their story, helping them see why they develop this, having empathy and understanding for it, but then also bringing in the whole picture that, well, the reality is we actually need people. And one of my old supervisors came up with this acronym that I actually posted a video about a long time ago called PMS. Not premenstrual, not that. But let's preface that. But PMS, so person, mind, substance. Person, mind, substance. So think of how we seek out comfort when we're in distress, whether it's stress at work or at home or whatever it is. Person, mind, substance. So I talked about how we're wired to seek out a person, people, to comfort. And that looks like, you know, again, like a parent. And if with a buddy, let's say a good friend, you might say, hey, dude, I had a rough day and
right,
it's been a rough week. Man, can we just go hang out?
Talk, have a drink, whatever.
Go talk, have a drink, go shoot hoops, do something. Yeah, that's engaging a person and you're talking through your day and de-stressing, and your buddies listen and say, dude, I get it, man, I'm here for you, man. Like, that's a great actually use of a person, because you're acknowledging what's going on. You're finding comfort in a relationship. You feel safe enough to talk, and that person's able to kind of be there for you and to listen and to acknowledge, and you feel better. You're like, I felt really good to talk to Tim last night, man. I'm just hanging out and, like, you know, just talking through things and, you know, shooting hoops or whatever we're doing, you feel better, because what you're doing is you're finding out comfort in relationship. So a lot of guys a lot of men have it flipped where they turn to a substance first. So it's substance, you know, mind, person, where they turn to people last. And as I said earlier, it's often linked to, there's a story as to why they often don't turn to people, often due to not feeling heard or safe in relationship, or often they might have been shamed or made guilty or told they weren't man enough, right? There's things that get stuck in the story. And so they learn, well, I can't really talk to people about this. And so they don't. They just don't talk to people, or, you know, at least they don't talk to people about what's going on. They might talk to their buddy, right? But like I said, the example earlier was a good example of saying, hey, dude, I had a long week. Can we just talk and just be, do you just talk through stuff? That's a good example of using a person to actually process. The other way is we might just be with friends, but not actually talking about what's going on. We're just kind of just, we're using them as actually as a substance.
Right.
So I want you to think of substance as a distraction. So substance is a distraction. It's a temporary relief from the problem. Now, substances for some of us, it for sure can be alcohol. Absolutely. It can be drugs, but I want you to think of it so much more. I think what I said earlier is that you could see guys going to the gym and they're working out a ton.
Right.
Now that could be a substance if they're never actually addressing the pain and problem in their life, if they're just distracting all the time by being at the gym. Now, is that healthier than drinking a 12 pack every night? Well, yeah, obviously liver and kidney. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the emotional, mental effect that you're distracting, and I don't care what you're distracting with. I don't care what substance you're putting in. If you're never actually addressing the problem, well, that emotional toll, that mental toll doesn't go anywhere. It just gets bigger. Until eventually that stuff builds up enough to a pressure point that it comes out in some form or fashion, often that you can't control, and often in a way that's not so helpful. So I might see men being more irritable, more angry, low frustration tolerance, low patience, things like that. They might take it out on their partner or spouse by just being critical. They might, you know, it starts to manifest in other areas because that energy, that pressure has to go somewhere.
Right.
And so then they might end up drinking. They might turn to something else to find the release. And so they just stay distracted their whole life. And this is also for those guys that work 80 hours a week. Right. And I'm not saying the guys that have to work out of necessity to survive, because there are men that they're doing everything they can just to pay bills. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the guys who don't do that, but they're just working, bringing in money. And then what happened is too, we also live in a culture that praises like kind of the work, quote unquote, workaholic. Cause it's like, hey, you're a good worker. It's like, but how's the rest of that guy's life? Right.
Right.
Is it balanced? How's the relationship with his kids, his family, his friends? You know, what's actually going on in this guy's life? And I've worked with quite a few men that they got all the accolades. They're making six figures. They got the cars and the house. But I look at the rest of their life and it's messy. It's chaotic. They have no relationships, or they're on their third marriage, or, you know, I mean, there's other things that happen. And so I help guys say, okay, what substances are you turning to? And I don't poo-poo them. I first say, okay, I see why. What is this doing for you? What is it doing? Help me understand, what relief is it? What is it relieving you of? Like, what is it? What solution is it giving you? What problem is it solving? What is it distracting you from? And I acknowledge the use of it. That makes sense why you do that, man. Like, I get it. Like, I wouldn't want to feel that either. I wouldn't want to think that, I wouldn't want to deal with that. That's hard. And so I meet them where they are. I acknowledge where they are. I don't shame them where they are. I said, okay, that makes sense. And also, this is probably what you know. It's probably helped you survive for the past 10, 15 years. So you're doing what you know. It's like you've been lifting wrong, but you're just doing what you know.
Right.
That to you is familiar. You don't think it's bad. Like, this just works for me.
Right.
And so I help them begin to identify, and then I have them write about it in journal. Okay, what are you feeling and thinking right before you do this, right before you engage in going back to work, or staying five more hours, or going back to the gym, or before watching Netflix, or right before you're looking at pornography, or right before you're, whatever the thing is, what's happening? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you noticing in your body? So I'm helping them kind of pay attention to, before I engage in the behavior, what is going on for me, to help build that awareness, build that muscle.
Right.
And even that pausing, stopping, that could even be an effective strategy, because it's pausing them from engaging in the behavior that often they might even, some of these guys have more shame and guilt around the behavior, whatever the thing might be, because they feel bad because there's this thing inside them that might say, I something doesn't feel right about doing this, but I don't know what else to do, so I'm doing it.
Right.
And so I'm building that awareness, that muscle, that stamina to kind of pause and delay that behavior, to sit in whatever they don't want to sit in, which is building their stamina, their agility, their strength to be there. It's like holding more weight. They could hold more weight now.
Right.
Now they can withstand holding this for like 5 minutes because they have the muscle. They have the form down.
Right.
And then I start to turn to the M or the mind, and I do things like mindfulness practices, meditative practices, mindful awareness of their body. They're, you know, and they've already actually been practicing mindfulness without knowing it, because as soon as they say mindfulness, a lot of people are like, turned off by it.
Right.
So even the fact, and they're building it without knowing it. They're doing it by identifying what they're feeling, thinking, and doing. So even that's mindful awareness of their body, their mind, their emotions, their behaviors. So that's a mindfulness practice, because right. They're paying attention. Again, I don't call it that until I get their buy-in.
They hate it.
They hate it. Wow, mindfulness doesn't work. Screw what's mindfulness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's that mean? Like,
I'm not wearing yoga pants. I don't wear.
Yeah, I don't wear yoga pants. Are surprisingly comfortable.
Yes, they are.
and so I do that with the mind, and I have them sit with it, and they're building that muscle. They're building that muscle. They're building that agility, that stamina. Another analogy I like to use when they're in the state is I'm in California, been to the ocean a lot. You know, surfing. So I often use the analogy of the emotions. It's like, hey, when those big waves come, what do? You know, when that big ocean's coming at you, you know, distraction is a lot of like turning your back to the wave and just like willing the water not to hit you.
Right.
Well, what happens if you turn your back to a big wave coming at you?
Crushed.
You get crushed.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like going in the water with your eyes closed. Well, you know, I'm just going to will it to stop. You know, I'm just going to go in there and just, you know, stop waves from coming. It's like, well, you can't stop it. It's going to come whether you want to or not. The difference is, do you have the capacity and skills and tools to navigate the water? And so that's what we're doing too. We're building the schools to learn how to surf. We're learning how to swim. We're learning how to know that when a wave is coming, sometimes the best way is actually to move toward the wave or toward the stress, toward the thing that you don't want to feel. Not try to run away from it, because if you try to run away from that wave, it sucks you in. You can't run away from it. Like it, that undertow pulls you. And so what we learn, if you move toward it, actually, you can go over it, you go under it, you can swim to the side. So there's things you can do. So it's through the pain, it's through the emotions, it's through the distress, not by avoidance. And a lot of nature shows this in so many ways. A lot of nature is riddled with these images and narratives of moving through pain and suffering to actually find freedom, not by avoidance. And so that's where I start with these guys. I start to look at their backwards SMP.
Right.
And then I start to build on awareness of the substances, and then start to be aware of why they do, and start to really build more of that M of that just with themselves. And then in turn, when they feel more comfortable, more stamina, start to look for people that actually are safe, start to look into relationships. And some of these guys don't know how to do that yet because they've never really done it. So it's kind of slowly helping them, coaching them through that process and building and talking through. And some of these guys, they might have one person that was safe that they remember. It's like, remember that coach, remember that teacher, there was something there, it was different, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, then you know what it is to have someone that is a good person that does listen to you. But now we just need to find it now as an adult. And when I work with dads, it's just another layer because dads they have responsibility to their kids. And so it's helping them to seek out other relationships. So that model is really what I help them build, that intelligence. I help them navigate. I help them build the strength and stamina so they can better navigate life. And when I am working with dads, you know, I talk to them like, hey, you're the model for your kids. They're looking to you, whether you want them to or not, to see how you deal with this stuff. I mean, you know, you could wish that not to happen, but sorry, dude, like you're a dad now. So as a father, as a dad, like your kids look to you 24/7.
Right.
They look at you at your worst and at your best and somewhere in between.
Right. Always looking.
They're always looking. They're always absorbing. And so I say, hey, it's not that you have a mistake. I mean, kids are quite forgiving and resilient. It's what you do when you slip up. That's the important step. It's what you do when you find yourself dysregulated or maybe raising your voice. It's what you do when you find yourself frustrated and tired and exhausted. Like that's, they look to you to see, how do you deal with difficulties in your life, Dad? And how can I learn from this by watching you? What am I learning to do this? And they take that and run with it, whether you want them to or not, they're doing it.
Right.
And so even, and kids don't need to be perfect. Again, kids are very forgiving. Oh my gosh. They're so forgiving. So something I modeled, to be real, if I, you know, have I raised my voice before? Yeah. Am I a therapist? Yep. Am I perfect? Heck no. I'm a person. I'm a human being. Even though I have a letters behind after my name, Travis Goodman, you know, MS, LMFT, I have letters. I'm not this perfect being. I'm a person. I'm still a guy. I still have my things that stress me out. I still have things that get me frustrated. I still have my oddities that we all do. I still have, I'm, and if I don't take care of myself, if I don't do the things to take care of myself, my frustration tolerance is really low. I have low patience. I'm easily frustrated. I don't parent well. Like, I resort to raising my voice versus like slowing down. Like, and what I do when I do that, what I model is the repair. I say, buddies, you know, my kids are little, I'm, you know, 5 and a half, 3 and a half little kids, but I say, you know, dad didn't take a breath, did he? You know, dad didn't count to 10, did he? No. Like, dad was frustrated and I raised my voice and that's not okay. And for that, I'm sorry. I don't say because you did this.
Right. You didn't put it on them.
No, I say, this is a me thing. I didn't breathe. I'm going to breathe now.
Wow.
To forgive dad for raising his voice. I'm so sorry. I needed to breathe and I'm going to work on that, buddy. And I'm going to work on this. And you know what my kids do? They give me a hug. They love me. They say, it's okay, dad. Like, and they get it. And because they know I love them when they have that.
Right.
And so it's this model of really the beauty of imperfection and how you heal when there's a misstep versus having to be this perfect stoic thing that has no faults and failure and no issues. Because then I'm modeling them that they can't have issues, that they can't have problems. And then more importantly, I don't model them how to repair when there's a rift, and they don't know how to repair when they get older. So they get stuck in relationships and do things that they don't know how to navigate when there's been a rift or a conflict. So I'm modeling them, I'm setting themselves up for a future where they know how to deal with relationships, how to be in touch with their emotions and their thoughts and their body. And I model that by doing it even imperfectly in my cracks. I show them those cracks, and again, age appropriate. You know, it's age appropriate making it accessible to a kid, but I'm modeling the healing. Like, I'm sorry, I'm working on that, guys, and I'm doing better. And then I know if I have those moments, I can always point to that I haven't been doing my morning routine, or I've been lacking on it, or I haven't been working out, or I haven't been eating well, or I haven't been journaling or meditating or breathing. There's things that I haven't done that often lead me down that path. And I'm like, yeah, I got to get back to these things, because this is why these things enabled me to be a better dad, better father, better husband, better friend, better therapist, all those things. And I have to take seriously that I tell the guys in my office, I got to do the very things that I tell them to do. So not only am I telling them and coaching them, I'm kind of re-coaching myself in the process to remind myself that I too got to do the things that I need to do to care for me. That I need to turn to safe people and talk and get support. That I need to do things that I'm engaging the things in my life that's stressful. That I need to be aware if I'm over, you know, if I'm watching maybe a few more Netflix shows versus actually dealing with the problem in my life. Mm-hmm. And not that those things are bad, but if I start to go there too often, I start to slip and I start to get into a place where I'm not balanced and I get out of balance. And so I have to come back to balance, and you know, we all veer. It's that awareness of every day. Where am I? You know, how far am I drifting? Let me get back on the road. Let me back on the journey. Cause I'm over here. Let me come back. I'm over here. Come back. Not out of shame or guilt, but out of awareness of this is what I need to be a healthy, holistic dad, father, you know, all those things. That's what I do.
You've in that question, you answered all my questions. So whenever there's going to be a question, I'm just going to like subtitle it underneath, because you expanded so well on exactly what it is we're kind of, I guess the story that we're trying to see, right? Because we just started with what do you what's the first thing you tell them to do? And you went through the whole process of like just understanding and like, that's huge. And now the next question was, what type of skills do you teach the person? You're like journal. And that other one that was the high and low is amazing. That's the best, easiest thing you can do. Of course, it's going to be hard for someone, not saying it's easy for another person, but it's a, and then I, and of course the overworker in me was like, oh, I'll give you like seven good things and then I'll do seven bad things. And then you're like, no, just pick one. Once someone that stood out, I was like, all right, or that made it even easier to do.
Yeah.
You know? And then the stuff with the kids, like, this is a perfect example. Like I'm doing my best to not yell. And I don't really anymore. I really take that step back. I take the breath. Like you said, there's going to be times where I'm like, you know, and I lose it. But instead of putting it on me, I wouldn't put it on them. I would just like, I guess, leave, right? Just flee the situation.
Yeah.
Whereas I could say, you know, dad didn't take a breath. Did dad do this yet? Did dad do any of the skills that he's been working on? No. So I'm sorry for raising my voice. You know, that wasn't appropriate. It's a great way. It's great. It was great. This whole whatever time we've been on is great. And I could talk to you forever and ever and ever because it was, it landed. You know what I mean? And like what, like what I said in your videos, it lands. And today I'm sure it's going to land on a lot of people.
Thanks, man.
I don't know. I really had no other questions because you, as you said it, I was like, oh, that was one. Kind of cover stigma. Why do men do this and this? And this makes a lot of sense. Is there anything that you want to expand on really quick, you know, before we close out the cast? Any questions that you usually go to?
Yeah, I think just, you know, the more, you know, as I'm journeying into my journey of fatherhood and, you know, I've been doing therapy now for about 10 years and working with men and women and hearing both sides. And I think at the end, really, we're all looking for very similar things, even our kids. You know, we're all looking at the end of the day, at the core, if I get to the core, what everyone's looking for, a lot of men are looking that they know that they're enough.
Right.
I think a lot of men struggle with that. They think they're not doing enough or they're not enough for their kids or their family. And they tend to try to prove themselves in different ways. Right. And that could really be a negative driving force into different things. Fears, anxieties, different things. And so I think at the end of the day, I encourage that, tell everyone like, no, you're enough. You have worth, you have value. You don't have to prove yourself. Just like when I ask parents this, it's like, hey, when you think of your kid, does your kid have to do anything to prove his worth or her worth? Do they have to do anything to have value to you? And most parents and dads say, no, they're just, I love them for who they are. Well, yeah, they're the same way. And I think a lot of us don't, a lot of men struggle with that. Which a lot of us do, that self-criticism, that they hold our, that they hold themselves to a different standard than they hold the people they love.
Right.
And my encouragement for them is, start seeing yourself like a little kid again. Start to see yourself like a little 3, 4, 5-year-old and see that that really, that kid is just has value and worth. Now, that's not to say that you don't need to change and work on yourself. That you might need to change things in your life. You might need to improve things. You might need to get rid of certain things that are actually unhealthy and unhelpful to you. You might need to trade them in for more healthy things. You might need to change your form. You might need to lift correctly. But it doesn't change your value and worth as a human being. And I think if we stop striving and just start to recognize, even if we don't necessarily believe it, some of us may still struggle with that belief and like, well, I don't really believe it. It's like, start to act as if you are worth, act as if you are enough, act as if you have value, act as if you are not a failure, act as if, right? Just start acting that way. Well, then your life starts to change because then you stop striving and start looking for things that are actually important. And then you start to reduce the use of substances and distractions and start to engage what you are because you're not having to deal with this shame of I'm not enough or failure or broken or flawed or... And I think that's such a big component. So I encourage dads, guys, you are enough. You have value, have worth. What you say matters. Even if in your whole life you never thought that, never felt that way, in the end you do. You truly do. And start treating yourself as if you matter. Start treating yourself with kindness and love like you would treat your kids or someone you truly care for. Some guys, let's say, I'm sure don't have kids, but maybe you have your partner you love and you would do anything for, or you have a friend that you care for and you're very supportive and you listen well. Well, do that to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, let go of the hypercriticism and start to listen to yourself, start to show yourself support, much like someone you care for. And for a lot of us, I know it's one of the hardest things to do. Definitely one of the hardest things to do is to start to do that, because there's a shift. It's like, but it's like there's this button there, but I'm unique. Like I'm the, and I tell them, well, then, and I kind of go with them in a joking way, not joking, but I'm like, yeah, so you're the unique snowflake that deserves to be treated like crap all the time. Yep. You're it. You're the one person in the world that deserves to be treated like utter junk and to be beat up all the time. Absolutely. Yep. And they look at me, I'm like, why are you saying that? Like, cause I just go with their crazy. Right. I'm like, well, cause hear your, are you hearing yourself? Hmm. And they, well, but I'm, but, and there's all this buts of why they deserve it. And it's no, you don't. You don't. And right. So that's what I want to leave guys with. Hey, man, and women too. I mean, I get a lot of women in my office, and they're very similar. Some different nuance there, absolutely. But for various different reasons, what there's how they're socialized. But, you know, I'm trying to address men and fathers here that I work a lot with is, no, you have value, man. Like, absolutely. Nothing you need to prove yourself. I'm all for changing and growing yourself and being healthy, but start with acceptance of who you are today.
Yes.
And that actually, it sounds counterintuitive, but if you start actually with acceptance, that actually opens the door for freedom and to move freely rather than this rigid, like, I have to get here to have worth. I have to have this job. I have to have this promotion. I have to make this amount of money. I have to get this. Because then we're stuck in this game of trying to meet some standard that we'll never really ever meet. Because once we meet that standard, what happens is that goalpost gets moved another 100 yards.
Right.
And it's the next mountain, because it's never enough. Nothing's ever going to fill that hole until you start now saying, no, I don't need to prove. And again, it's not to say that we don't need to change or improve. Absolutely we do.
Right.
Absolutely we do. But stop moving that goalpost. Just start now.
Absolutely. What is it? No expectation, rather replace it with appreciation.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Thing, you know? Yeah. Let go of expectation, start with appreciation. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's kind of what it hit when you said that. I was like, oh, I remember this. Mm-hmm. And that's a great way you can end this podcast. Like, thank you for that that message, man. I don't know if it's for everybody. This is just for me. So I might not even post it now. I'm just going to keep it for myself and just listen to it all the time.
At night while you're falling asleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Instead of binaural beats or whatever I put on right next to me. But where could everyone find you? I know I don't. IG.
On IG, it's Therapy for Dads with the number 4, which is, I have a podcast as well. So that IG is a mix of podcast posts from what I do there, as well as some other kind of specific kind of looking at men and father stuff around kind of the intersection of mental health and education and father and parenthood. So that's that. And then I have a YouTube channel, which is not geared specifically towards fathers. It's just other mental health, holistic stuff. And that's just youtube.com/Travis Goodman. It's my name. Goodman is how it looks. Goodman, Travis Goodman. That's to find me. And then I have a website, which is just therapyfordads.com, which has other links. So send me a DM on Instagram. Find me on YouTube. Reach out. I won't bite. I do want to help. And, you know, I think I'm friendly. At least according to Pete, I'm friendly and I'm good. So I you know, listen to Pete. He knows. So I try to help. And if I don't get back to you right away, it's, you know, I am a father of 3 and have other things in my life. So give me a little bit. Sometimes it takes me a second or two. And I do my best. But seriously, reach out anytime. If I could help you, I will. If I could point in the right direction, I will. You know, and if I don't know the answer, I'll do my best to find something to at least give you to start with. So I'm all about building community and relationships with people. I think that's the thing I've enjoyed most with getting to know Pete and being on his show and him being on mine, is building relationship with other people that really have a heart, that really care, that really want to build bridges and really want to create a community of people that want to bring healing to this world that has a lot of pain and suffering in it. So I think if we could keep doing that in our grassroots style, that, you know, not to be cheesy, but I think we could really impact this world for better. Absolutely. And so I love doing this stuff, because I think this is what we need more reports on and news on, is this type of stuff, when people are connecting and really trying to learn and heal and help one another. Right. We need more of this on the news.
Right.
We need more of this circulated, the good stuff, people being generous. And so, you know, that's why I'm doing this, is to, with the sphere of influence I have, with the power that I have, I want to give it away and help. and learn too, because I'm not perfect. I'm always learning. I'm always trying to grow in so many ways. So Pete, I thank you, man, for having me on and being part of your big episode. So I feel very honored again. So thank you for having me on number 100.
100. We'll get you back on 200. Nah, that's a long time.
Well, I don't want to wait that long.
I know, exactly. 201. 101. 101. See you next week.
I'll see you next week.
But guys, thank you so much, Trav. Thank you for, again, taking your time to come out today. And yeah, man, I'm not ending the podcast anyway. He talked a very good game, and hopefully you guys got a lot of input out of that. And I'll see you guys next week. This is Pete. It's Travis, the Jersey to Vegas podcast, episode number 100. Happy to be here, and thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys later. Thanks.
It's okay, baby, it's okay. Got a lot of words you don't know how to say. Pull out all your big ones, tryna flip my face. I give you a big hug, say I'm feeling great. It's okay, baby.